The psychiatrist listened very carefully as his patient explained his problem. He said, "I own a brand new top-of-the-line Mercedes. I have a beach house in Bermuda. I have a 12-room penthouse in Manhattan. I have a 90-foot yacht. I have one of the finest wine cellars in the world. And my closet, my walk-in closet, is literally filled with clothing from the finest tailor in London. But I'm still not happy." And the psychiatrist thought for a minute and he said, "Do you have a Rolex?" What makes you happy? What causes you to find fulfillment and satisfaction and meaning in life? Silently in your mind, answer this question. I would be happy if... Is your happiness more due to your circumstances in life? Or is your happiness due more to your attitude about life? Our ideas of happiness usually focus on ourselves, on getting things and doing things, on what we become, on what we have, on what we've achieved, whatever that may be. Author and playwright Oscar Wilde said this of himself: "The gods had given me almost everything, but I let myself be lured into long spells of senseless and sensual ease. Tired of being on the heights, I deliberately went to the depths in search of new sensation. What the paradox was to me in the sphere of thought, perversity became to me in the sphere of passion. I grew careless of the lives of others. I took pleasure where it pleased me and passed on. I forgot that every little action of the common day makes or unmakes character, and that therefore, what one has done in the secret chamber, one has someday to cry aloud from the housetop. I ceased to be lord over myself. I was no longer the captain of my soul, and I did not know it. I allowed pleasure to dominate me. I ended in horrible disgrace." As Job chapter 20 and verse 5 says, "The mirth of the wicked is brief. The joy of the godless lasts but a moment." How long does your happiness in what you seek for happiness last? Does it last a moment, or a day, a week, a month, a year, or longer? Do you seek a happiness that just contents you for a while because you've kind of lowered your standards for what happiness is to you? Or do you have a happiness that's greater, that lasts longer, that endures, that has more legs to it, more foundation, more security and stability, regardless of the times, regardless of the circumstances. The writer of Ecclesiastes searched for happiness and fulfillment and meaning in every empty way that people who are not focused on God generally seek it in. As he achieved each one, he assesses every one of them the same way, meaningless. Can you imagine having the resources, the time, the opportunity, the power, the authority to pursue anything and everything that you thought had the potential for meaning and fulfillment and satisfaction and happiness in your life? And you not only did it marginally, you did it grandly. People were impressed by what you did, by what you had, by what you achieved, by what you owned, by you. And yet, for every one of them, your evaluation of that was meaningless. It didn't achieve any of the things that you had hoped it would. None of the things that you had set out to achieve. In all that he accomplished and acquired, he found no meaning. Can you imagine waking up every morning, going off to work, and you have hopes for the day? You have hopes that there will be things that will happen in the course of the day that will be creative, that will be new, that will be exciting. And at the end of the day, you can say, that was a good day. That was a day when we achieved some things. That was a day when I can go home feeling up and positive and excited about my life today. Only you get to the end of the day and you look at it and say, meaningless. I find no meaning. And imagine that happened every day for a week. And imagine that happened every day for a month, and for a year, and for year after year. Your assessment was continually meaningless. His bitterness deprived him of happiness because he focused on life's unfairness. Throughout this short book we call Ecclesiastes, here is this story of this man who had seen it all, seemingly done it all, achieved it all, and yet he assessed it all, after all had been said and done, as meaningless, because all he did was focus on all of the downsides. He focused on the evil and the injustice of oppression and power in politics. He focused on the seeming pointlessness of work. You get up and you work and your day's done and you do it all over again the next day and the next day and the next day. And maybe at the end of some period of time, whether it's agriculture or whether it's a craft or whatever it may be, you see something of value, some product that comes, but you can't find any value in the product. And you start the cycle all over again, and over and over and over it goes. He saw the emptiness of religious rituals that seemed to be rituals for the sake of rituals that didn't really seem to accomplish anything. He saw the lack of fulfillment in money and possessions and human honor, that all of those come and go. And there seems to be a variance of the values that we have on those things, or at least the community has on them. He saw the futility of trying to understand what is good. Don't we still deal with that? I mean, we say, well, sure, I know about God's word. I know that God's word tells me what is good and what isn't. But then there's the culture that has a different idea of what is good. And you know, a lot of the times I look at what the culture considers as good, and I see some good things in it. But then there's things that I'm not sure about. The culture calls it good, but I'm not sure God would call it good. And there's things about it that just don't seem to be right, but there's things about it that do seem to be right. And so I'm frustrated about it. And he focused on on the certainty of death and the uncertainty of what follows death. Where in all of that could he find any reason to be happy? But you know, the writer of Ecclesiastes was not alone and is not alone today. There are many people still struggling with that question. Where is the meaning, the satisfaction, the fulfillment, the happiness that I can have in life? I think that the writer of Ecclesiastes speaks for every human being. Now, you and I may not be struggling with this all of our lives. We may find ourselves just from time to time finding those dead spots, if you will. But he does speak for all of us at some point in time in our lives. We pursue different earthly activities, all in the search for meaning and fulfillment, don't we? Even as Christians. We're discouraged when we do not find them. We accomplish significant things from an earthly perspective, but despite accomplishing these significant, even valuable things from an earthly perspective, we cannot enjoy them forever because these things don't last forever. And we all eventually die. Our heirs may not have a part in what we've accomplished, or they may not value what we've accomplished, or they may not maintain what we've accomplished. And so our work, as valuable as it seemed to us and even to other people, as hard as we worked at it, as thoughtful as we were about it, perhaps even as prayerful as we were about it, our work ultimately seems to be lost. All of us will experience some of these things. How do you respond to those things? Every one of us will have a different response. Every one of us will say, well, this applies to me and this doesn't apply to me. Or we might say, well, I haven't experienced that yet, but we will. We all will. Believing we have to make the best of our situations, the writer of Ecclesiastes offers these thoughts. He says, I know that there is nothing better for men than to be happy and do good while they live, that everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all his toil. This is the gift of God. He says, I saw that there is nothing better for a man than to enjoy his work, because that is his lot. He writes in Ecclesiastes chapter 5 in verses 18 through 20, I realize that it is good and proper for a man to eat and drink and to find satisfaction in his toilsome labor under the sun during the few days of life God has given him, for this is his lot. Moreover, when God gives any man wealth and possessions and enables him to enjoy them, to accept his lot and to be happy in his work, this is the gift of God. He seldom reflects on the days of his life because God keeps him occupied with gladness of heart. And then he says, I commend the enjoyment of life because nothing is better for a man under the sun than to eat and drink and be glad. Then joy will accompany him in his work all the days of the life God has given him under the sun. Do you hear a continuing refrain? There is nothing better. Is that true? Is there nothing better than what this writer has evaluated to be? It seems to me that all of his evaluations, all of these supposedly satisfactions or joys or happiness that he talks about reflect a lack of attention to God's blessings on all people and a lack of knowledge of God's will for all people on the face of the earth. When we pay attention to what God has done and what God is doing and what God continues to do and promises to do, we realize that God's ideas of happiness are focused on helping others and in the process of glorifying Him. Science has shown that people who have close friendships are happier, more successful, and even more physically and emotionally healthy. There is such a thing as a happiness researcher and writer by the name of Sonia Lyubomirsky. And she has found this through her research. Happiness is about engagement and meaning and progressing toward your goal. Happy people are not as self-centered as unhappy people. They're more generous and other-focused. It's not how much money a person has, but whether or not they spend it helping others. And then she concludes with this thought. The truth is, your attitude and how you think and behave can have a lot of influence on your level of happiness. And that last point, I believe, is at the core of what God told His people who had been taken as captives to Babylon in Jeremiah 29 and verses 1 and then verses 4 through 7. This is the text of the letter that the prophet Jeremiah sent from Jerusalem to the surviving elders among the exiles and to the priests, the prophets, and all the other people Nebuchadnezzar had carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to all those I carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. Build houses and settle down. Plant gardens and eat what they produce. Marry and have sons and daughters. Find wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage so that they too may have sons and daughters. Increase in number there, do not decrease. Also, seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. See, the Israelites thought life had come to an end. Their country had been taken, their city had been taken, it had been destroyed. People had been slaughtered left and right, and only the best and the brightest had been taken into exile. They were now in a foreign country, in a foreign culture, in a godless culture, at least without Jehovah God. They thought their God had deserted them, given up on them, walked away, turned his back, and now they were hopeless and helpless in Babylon. And God says, as bad as you think it is, life still goes on, and you must go on and listen to me and do as I've told you. You must make the best of a horrible situation as you view it, but it's not as bad as you view it, because I am with you, and I will care for you, and I will provide for you, and I will stick to my promises to you. So you must live even here as I have told you. And as you do, you will find meaning and fulfillment and satisfaction and joy and happiness. Philippians 4 and verse 8 challenges us to shape our attitudes by the good things that God provides in this world. So the author, Paul the Apostle, writes, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Don't you wish that the writer of Ecclesiastes had heard that and practiced that? What a different attitude he would have about life. But you know, the Apostle Paul is writing much, much later than the writer of Ecclesiastes. He's writing to people in the first century He's writing to a developed world, a very modern world as they would consider it, very modern even as we would consider it in many ways. But he's writing to a world that had all kinds of philosophies and gods and viewpoints about that, those religions. And there was a lot of confusion, and there was a lot of discouragement. And in the midst of all that, particularly persecution as Christians, that he writes these words. He wasn't Pollyannish. He knew about all of the negative things out there. But he writes to people like you and I, his fellow Christians, saying, we need to think beyond these things. We need to see God at work beyond what is and is unjust. We need to see beyond the things that discourage us every day. We need to see beyond this world. We need to see it through the eyes of God, through faith in God, through belief that God has something to tell us that makes life here so much better, that can give us joy and happiness. In his book, Excellence, John W. Gardner wrote this: we fall into the error of thinking that happiness necessarily involves ease, diversion, tranquility, a state in which all of one's wishes are satisfied. Isn't that the way we normally define happiness? For most people, happiness is not to be found in this vegetative state, but in striving toward meaningful goals. Isn't that true? Jesus reflected this kind of thinking in Matthew chapter 5 and verses 11 through 12 when he said, blessed are you. You know what blessed means? Happy. Blessed are you, happy are you when people insult you. Wait a minute, Jesus. Don't you have things kind of backwards here? How can I possibly feel blessed or happy when people persecute me? I'm not done yet. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. I'm not there yet, Jesus. I'm not getting this yet. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. What are you saying, Jesus? How can I possibly feel happy? How can I be glad and rejoice when this is going on? When I'm the point of that, when I'm suffering from that, it's because our happiness in the greatest way is not here. It's preparation for heaven, where that greatest happiness is to be found. When we turn from the temporary and the meaninglessness of the things in this world, the things this world offers us with the promise of happiness, and we turn toward God, we find a happiness which does not fade and which lasts beyond this life. The writer of Psalm 92, verse 4, did this. He'd made this turn. He'd had all the opportunities of this life and what it offered. But he saw that God had much more to offer. And he said this to God: you make me glad by your deeds, O Lord. I sing for joy at the works of your hands. You see, the happiness that we think about so much in this life that has to do with us had been transformed into a happiness that was focused not on him, but on God. It was experiencing the wonders and the awesomeness of God, and finding that that was perfect, complete, without any flaws, without any injustice. That was where joy and gladness were to be found. King David saw and real and lasting happiness when he said this to God: you have made known to me the path of life. You will fill me with joy in your presence, with eternal pleasures at your right hand. Isn't that ultimately what we want? Sure, we want happiness in this life, on this earth. We want to be able to explore and enjoy the things that God has made available to us here. But like that writer of Ecclesiastes, we hope and pray that there is more than just this life, because we recognize its incompleteness, its flaws, its imperfections. And we want the fullness that is promised by God. If we look for happiness in what this world offers, we'll find it's only temporary, momentary, brief, and fading. Real, lasting happiness is only found in God as his son or his daughter. That's why God calls us to give our lives wholly to him, because he wants us to experience a happiness that can only be found in him, a happiness that transcends what this world has to offer, a happiness that's permanent and without flaw. That's what he calls all of us to when he calls us to give up ourselves and give ourselves to him wholeheartedly. Have you done that? I hope and pray that to the largest extent of those gathered in this room today, that you have. But if you have not, or if you have at one point in time, but you pull back and take life back on your own grounds, I urge you, don't wait a minute more. Give your life wholeheartedly to God today. And if we can help you, we urge you to come forward right now while we stand and sing this song.